podcast.
Then come on down
to www.destroythebrainonline.com for your up-to-date horror news, DVD release dates, DVD announcements, plus reviews, 42nd minute, and director spotlight. www.destroythebrainonline.com, your podcast home for horror and cult cinema.
Enjoy the show, folks!
This is Andy from Destroy the Brain. Destroy the Brain's a podcast, a weekly podcast that delivers horror news, DVD announcements, DVD release dates, and a couple of reviews, sometimes some interviews as well, and along with your feedback. This week I am releasing the Room Ward Festival of Fear 2008 panels that I recorded back in August of 2008. It was a great time. And this week, well, actually this episode that you're about to hear, is the Sid Haig panel. For those of you that do not know, Sid Haig starred in Spider Baby, The Big Dollhouse, and The Big Birdcage, THX-1138, had a bit role, well, not a bit role, but he was in Diamonds Are Forever, a bit role in Jackie Brown, bit role in Kill Bill, most notoriously known as Captain Spaulding recently of House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. Sid talks about a various amount of things, mainly working in the television industry, Rob Zombie, and even reveals a touching story on why he donates to charity. Sid's a great speaker, and I hope you all enjoy it.
Lots of questions for him, and of course, I've got a couple of questions for him as well, because for me, it all started 1968, I guess, with Spider Baby.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Spider Baby, a Jack Hill film, and now how did you get involved with that?
I had done Jack Hill's student film at UCLA.
Right.
And when he got out into the world of Roger Corman, he got an assignment to do a film for Roger. Roger Corman would go to Europe and find films that couldn't pay their lab fees, and so he would pay the lab fees and just snatch up the films. And so he bought this thing that was some kind of, it was supposed to be some kind of horror film, but it had great exteriors, okay? So he bought it just for the exteriors and brought it back and hired Jack to put a story to the exteriors. So he did that, and Jack said, you know, come on, do this. I don't know what the hell we're going to do, but let's do something. And so we did Bloodbath. And the review for Bloodbath said that it looked like it was a compilation of three different films. How astute, because it was. Because after Jack got through and was working on another project, Roger wanted some additional footage and then hired Stephanie Rothman to do the additional footage, and to show you that people really don't pay attention sometimes, I was working on another project, and I shot the additional footage for her on the weekend, and in the original, I was clean-shaven, but I had a beard, okay, and I said, I can't shave my beard because I'm working on this other show, and, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, it'll be fine. So I'm running down the street, and I turn the corner, and I have a beard. Nobody knew. Yeah, so that was that. And then, you know, he hired me to do a couple other things, and then we did Spider-Man, which was pretty cool.
Definitely, and I wanted Lon Chaney Jr.'s last movie, so what was it like working with him?
He actually became my mentor, okay, through making that film. Gentleman, very gentle, sweet guy, was so appreciative of the fact that somebody actually remembered him and wanted him to do a starring role in the film, that he himself insisted that they put into the contract that he could not have a drink during the making of the film. Okay, and for those of you who don't know, he had a real alcohol problem, created in part by his youth, okay, because we are a product of, you know, what happens to us in the first 10 years. but you know, through Hollywood and then through making all the Wolfman films, because the technology was pretty basic. They would shoot when they did the transformation scenes, and I think there were like seven of them in that, and all in different locations. He would lie down wherever it was that he was supposed to be and stare at a target, and then shoot a few feet of film, and then they'd stop the camera, and the makeup department would come in and put a little hair, and then they'd shoot a little more, and then they'd put a little hair, and the whole transformation would take 20 hours.
Okay.
So he just basically he had him put a bottle of scotch here with some surgical tube in there and got Barney Expression fucked up. And that's how he got through doing those films. And that helped to mess him up and basically ruin his career, too.
Yeah.
And that, and coupled with the fact that during Bela Lugosi's final months on the planet, Lon volunteered to be his caretaker. And that was a pretty bad experience that he had to go through because, you know, you see your friend just going down the tubes and, you know, $500 a day heroin habit. And, you know, Lugosi would walk through his house and he had like 2,000 little figurines or statues of himself as Dracula, and he'd see one, and his brain was so fried, he'd strike the pose and start doing dialogue and stuff.
Wow.
Yes, it's time to go to bed. Nasty. So, you know, he had a tough role.
Now, a couple of years later, in 71, you worked with George Lucas on THX-1138.
I certainly did.
Now, how did you get involved with that?
It was one of those things where most of the people that were involved in the scene in Limbo. Anybody seen this film?
Oh, come on, yes, definitely.
The scene in Limbo, that whole white environment, most of the people that were in that were in the Murat Saad production that was done in San Francisco. And what a place to do that, of course. And they were all improvisational actors. And, he was based in San Francisco at that time. And so I got called in and basically put through my paces as an improvisational actor. And got hired to do the gig. And it was kind of strange because we had this rehearsal space. We rehearsed the show for 5 days, and then we shot it in 5 days. And he would come in the morning and say, you know, I'd like to have you guys work on blah, 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 whatever. And then he would come back in the evening and see what we had done and then make little changes to it. And then the next day we'd do the same thing all over again. So, you know, we saw the director of the film like 20 minutes a day. But that was a really an interesting experience. It was something that it was too big a bite for him, you know, because the way he had that scene set up was that everyone had their own individual microphone and amplifier and tape deck, okay. And he had 5 cameras working, everything from a 9mm lens to a 1,000mm lens. And so if we were all in this room and we were just talking, you would hear this murmur, okay? And the camera would maybe switch from this to that way, and then all of a sudden those people would be in a scene, but we would be in a scene over here being caught by that camera, so there were all these scenes going on at the same time.
Wow.
He went, yeah, okay, how do I put this together? You know, it was supposed to be like 20 minutes long, and it wound up being 7 minutes long. And if you watch the film and you say, God, you know, I'm a little confused on what's up, well, all of the exposition of the film took place in that scene. So, there, you know, mystery solved.
Now, going from that to, a blockbuster movie like Diamonds Are Forever, what does that do to you as an actor, like going from experimental George Lucas flick to something like that, where you were one of the Slumber Brothers?
The Slumber Brothers, yeah. That was fun. Sean Connery was so much fun to work with. Great guy. And we were just goofing through the whole thing. He hated the wig. Okay. And when they would holler rap, he'd just grab it and throw it in the air. And if a hairdresser happened to be under it when it landed, okay. But otherwise, who cares? He was trying to destroy it, I think. But he was great to work with. And then, of course, I had the nasty task of throwing the half-naked Lana Wood out the window of the hotel.
Tough.
Sorry. Somebody had to do it. It was a lot of fun.
You've made so many TV appearances that it's incredible. I just did a quick look on IMDb. The A-Team, T.J. Hooker, Dukes of Hazzard, Fantasy Island, Charlie's Angels, $6 Million Man, Get Smart, Batman, of course, Star Trek, one of the lawgivers. Save us, Landrew. So, going from movies to TV, which did you prefer?
Film.
Film?
Definitely, yeah, because... yes, it's here for film. Because you have more time to develop characterizations, you don't have somebody's foot up your butt all day. As a matter of fact, I will tell a story about Pulp Fiction.
Please.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino brought me in to audition for Pulp Fiction, and I did. And he apparently liked what I did because he wanted me to do the film, and I... of course, read the script, and I wanted to do the film. And so the deal came down, and X amount of money for one day. I didn't care about the money. The thing that bothered me was that there were four different locations for this character, and doing it all in one day just smacked the television all over again. And I freaked out. I called my agent, and I said, you know what? Tell them to stuff it, because this has got TV written all over it. Okay, I had no idea, and they were stupid. Quentin Tarantino doesn't work that way. If it takes a day, it takes a day. If it takes 2 weeks, it takes 2 weeks. Okay, nobody told me that. Okay? And so instead of me, Bing Rhames played Marcellus. So that was that. Good for him, bad for me.
Talking about Tarantino, in 1992, you basically decided to go into a kind of self-imposed retirement, and you said that you were sick and tired of playing heavies, didn't want to do that anymore. Now Tarantino gets in touch with you because he made a character for you.
Yeah.
And that was...
the judge, Jackie Brown.
Right.
Yeah. He called me. I don't know how you got my phone number. but when you're Quentin Tarantino, I guess you can get anything. Quentin Tarantino and the FBI. And he said, I understand, you don't want to play any more heavies, blah, 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 I get it. I've written the part of the judge for you in Jackie Brown, and you will play it. Okay. Whatever you say, boss. And so that's how it all happened. And the thing that was cool was that I had already done 5 films with Pam Grier, lucky me. And and he didn't tell her that he had cast me in that role. So when she showed up on the set, it was just freak out time, We had this great reunion. It was very cool.
So she walks on the set and sees you playing this judge for the first time?
And she literally hit the floor laughing.
Amazing. Yeah. So now we're going to fast forward to House of 1000 Corpses. And what's the involvement? How do they contact you and say, I want to be Captain Spaulding?
This was still when I was basically in retirement, right? Because, nothing happened from Jackie Brown. Oh, yeah, I played the judge. Okay, bye. I got a call from my agent, and he said, okay, here's the deal. I went, shit, what now? And I said, go to this building and sign a letter of non-disclosure, take the script home, read it. If you like it, the part's yours. Well, that's a step in the right direction. So I took the thing home and I said, oh yes, I can have fun with this. And so I said, yeah, I want to do it. And I'd never talked to Rob. We'd never met. The first time we met was actually when I got my wardrobe call.
Right.
And fast forward now to Rob's wedding. And at the reception, his brother and I were standing there talking, and he said, "This is so weird." I said, "What, the wedding?" He goes, "No, standing here talking to you." Said, "What are you talking about?" When he and Rob were kids, they used to get up every Saturday morning and watch Jason of Star Command.
Right.
Okay. And I guess that stuck with him. And he says, "Yeah, I need somebody to scare the shit out of people." So he's the guy.
Were you, for the development of the Captain Spaulding character, was, I mean, Rob was open to input from you? Did he have an idea of what that character was going to be?
He had an idea of what the character was going to be, but he was so cool and so open to anything, you know, that it just got to be to the point where he said, "Just, you know what has to happen? Just show me something, okay?" And in the scene where the guys come in to rob the store, and he's, you know, stick him up clowny, okay? And I went like that. We had to redo it because Rob cracked up. There was a lot of that happened. Sorry. But he was very generous in allowing me to just be me, which is crazy.
Yeah. And your character is the change that it had going into Devil's Rejects, where...
Yeah, well, I really appreciated that because it gave an opportunity to flesh out the character, you know, and make him more real and understand who he was and where he was coming from, which is a dark place.
Definitely.
If anybody ever read the biographies of all the different characters that Rob wrote on his website, oh my God. Captain Spaulding, who was actually called Cutter, okay, did just that. He was a cutter. And he had this thing for inserting candy canes in the orifices of people that he murdered. So there was a point in time when all of that stuff was up on the internet, that when I did conventions, I wanted to put candy canes up. See if anybody picked up on it.
Are you worried about, is we going to see Captain Spaulding in a prequel or anything like that?
Well, a prequel, I'd have to be younger, and I don't know, a makeup man in the
True.
World could do that. But it, we're dead.
Okay.
Money is the great resurrector. So if a studio throws, like, you know, 50 pounds of $100 bills at him and says, "Here, do this," yeah, we will return from the dead.
Yeah. Have you been happy with the roles that you've been offered since then?
Basically, yeah. And I'm at the point right now, which is like the dream for all actors, to be able to say, no, I don't think I want to do that. You know, I get a lot of offers every month, and some of them are really good, and some of them are pretty sophomoric, you know, like rehashes, you know. And I said, "Excuse me, I've seen 15 variations of this film. No, thank you." I'm having a good time with it now, and it's all good.
Night of the Living Dead in 3D.
Okay, it's not all.
I didn't want to really bring that up, but I what happened? Is it?
No. Excuse me while I jump in here and drown myself. You read something on a piece of paper and you say, "Yeah, this will work." And then because you're dealing with people who are new to the industry and really don't know what they're doing, everything gets fucked up. Okay? I mean, I was on the set, and before we even rehearsed a scene, the director said, "Would you mind if I gave you a line reading?" And I said, "No, not at all. If you want those to be the last words you ever speak." So that was my clue right there that this thing was going in the shitter. You know?
Okay, well, let's open it up to the floor for some questions. Yes?
Actually, I have two questions. One is related to Rob Zombie, because I'm a huge fan of his as a musician. I wonder what experience like, your experience veteran of industry working as a director. That's one question. And second question is, I could care less about good guys. It's a badass, which I care about. Who are your favorite movie villains are? If you give me a rundown of a few.
Okay. Wow. Well, let's take care of the first part of the question first. Rob is one of those directors that I would always like to work for, because he makes his vision very clear and then gets the hell out of the way and lets you do your job, you know? Movie villains, wow. There's a lot of really good ones. Some creepy guys, one of them right here at the show, as a matter of fact, Brad Dourif.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, you know, guys that I watched growing up as a kid that, you know, just really impressed me as bad guys. Zachary Scott was one. I know none of you know that because I'm 6,000 years old. I was looking over Edison's shoulder when he put the camera. There's just so many good bad guys around that it's hard to make a choice.
Okay. Yes?
Did you get to interact with Manton Moreland at all in the set of Spiders?
Absolutely. We had so much fun together. And he was 100% against the civil rights movement because it put him out of work. It just totally put him out of work. And he died pretty much penniless. Okay. But he and I, oh yeah, we had a great time. Had a great time together.
Yep.
You've been talking about getting in the director's chair yourself. I'm wondering what the progress on that is, whether we can look forward to you.
Well, you did something just recently, right?
Directing? No. But I should.
Okay.
Over a year ago, I was contacted by some people to direct a film. And I don't know what the big problem is. All I had to do was raise, you know, like $3 or $4 million. But I guess the bake sale business was going bad or something. If they get their shit together, hopefully I'll be able to direct this film, which is an amazing film. It's called Last Door, and it deals with something that is actually a true story. The story is this, that the husband and wife divorced, and the wife got custody of the son, and through just not being able to handle the kid anymore, the wife said, take the kid. Okay, so, okay, great, I have my son back, and gets the kid and discovers that he has multiple personalities. This is a true story, verified 100%, okay? 400 personalities came and went minute to minute all day long. And as a matter of fact, right now he's 32 years old and still has 12 personalities that have not been integrated. And it's a story about how this family deals with that situation. There's satanic ritual involved. Because part of that whole deal was that his mother gave him up to the Satanists and put him through these rituals, like the birthing ritual, where they slice open a cow and insert the baby, okay, and then sew him up and then cut him open again and take out the baby. And,
wow.
Yeah. That's going to be tricky to do, but I'll do it. I'm sure I can find a kid somewhere. 6-month-old that wants to be a star. he had to go through that kind of crap, you know, just to get through life. So that's what that's all about.
Cool.
Yeah. My kind of sick shit.
Yes.
How did you get involved with Galaxy of Terror?
There again, my good friend Roger Corman, okay, this guy kept me alive, I swear to God. as a matter of fact, I'm doing a segment in a documentary about him.
Good.
Yeah. Roger Corman called me, said, I have this part for you. And he would always, anytime he had a part for me, he would just send me the script and the contract with the money laid out in the contract, and it was just agreed that I either sign it and work or don't sign it and don't work. Bug deal. So I called him and I said, okay, Roger, yeah, this is pretty cool, except I have one condition. He said, I'm not giving you any more money. I know you would die before you gave over. Okay? He said, all right, what's the condition? I said, I want to do this without dialogue. Okay? He said, why? I said, have you read that shit? So he agreed to it. But we got on the set, and the director, I think, just like forced me into saying that one stupid line. I live and I die by the crystals. So, you know, it just ruined the whole film. Okay. But that's how I got involved.
Any other questions?
Yep.
Working with Rob? Of course, sure. I've just completed my voiceover work on The Haunted World of El Super Pisto. Yeah. We have no idea when that's coming out because he keeps adding to it. But I've been working on it for 3 years so far. Every third person in Hollywood is in it. And I guess he's going for the other two-thirds. I don't know. But yes.
I noticed that you were on one of the first episodes of MacGyver in the first season.
Yep.
And I wondered how that came about.
They called me. They called me and they said, you know, we have, that was when they would start an episode with the end of the previous story. And so it's, you know, we want you to play this Indian, East Indian bandit who steals these horses and then MacGyver comes in and steals them back. Okay. With a paperclip and so, you know, why not? But it was cool. I had a lot of fun doing that. Big horse chase at the end. And anybody ever see that episode? Besides you?
Yeah. Another one.
Because you know we had this big battle back and forth on the horseback and. He was on this beautiful white horse riding down the beach and all of a sudden he looked up and a cable came down from the sky, okay, and the camera pulls back and you see a helicopter. And he hooks the cable onto the pommel of the saddle and rider and horse up into the ocean, out over the ocean. It was cool, yeah. As a matter of fact, they won an award for that. For that stunt, yeah.
It's funny you talk about MacGyver and some of these other shows. Before Captain Spaulding, what were you being most recognized for? People on the street say, hey, you were...
Oh, sure. The role of Tex in Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Really?
Yeah. That was an amazing gig. I was hired to go in and do one episode and did that. And about 4 weeks later, the producer called and said, would you like to do a couple more? Because we had a good time and everything worked out. And I said, yeah, sure. 126 episodes later, I killed myself. Mary Hartman style, you know. Pulled the pin on the grenade and, oh, what did I do with this? Okay. But, and say, okay, this is how crazy. Anybody ever see Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. This is how crazy that show was and the people involved in it. Because, all right, blew myself up, stunned. And they came, you know, congratulated me on a great run. And, God, we're going to miss you. And I said, it's not over. Because I killed myself and my partner in crime. And he said, what do you mean? You just blew yourself up. I said, yeah, I know, but it's not over. And they go, okay, what do we do? I said, well, we come back as our wives to claim the bodies, okay? And the producer looked at me and said, call Western Costume. We need two dresses for tomorrow. Yeah, so that's how crazy I am.
Yes.
You did a great string of women in prison films in the Philippines. What was it like working there and with Pam Grier specifically?
Working with Pam Grier was never work, because I mean, she's like my little sister, okay? But the whole Philippine invasion thing was just so cool. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. This is not work. 10 half-naked women and me, come on. Where is the work? I see a shovel nowhere. It was just so much fun doing those films. It was great. It was a great time. It was a little primitive, okay? I had done about 4 films before somebody decided that they should maybe invent a portable toilet. Otherwise, it was go kill a bush. I had experiences that were no one could ever have. When we were shooting the big birdcage.
Yeah.
we were in this place called Banaui. And it was kind of a notorious headhunters region kind of thing, but they're so cool about it. They only do that like 2 weeks out of the year. It's like right before the planting of the rice, all debts are settled. You can't settle your debt, done. Yeah. So we weren't there at that time. I mean, it was a harvest time, not planting. Okay, we were there at the planting season. And we're walking along this path with our guide, and he said, you know, over the top of that ridge is a beautiful little village, but you guys don't want to go there. Yeah, right. It's like telling a kid, don't touch the candy. So I said, oh yeah, we're going there. So I, you know, how do we get there? He said, well, the trail is right there. That's okay, where? And it was like from erosion, okay? At some points the trail was this wide, and at some points it was that wide. So away we go, loaded up the cameras, boom, take off, and we're going to shoot a scene up there. And it was amazing. We come down into this valley, and the village is there, and it was pristine, quiet. It wasn't totally quiet because there was a ceremony going on. It was a big cone-shaped hut in the center with little huts around it. And our guide said, you wait here, and I want to get permission for us to come in. I said, oh yeah, do that. And so he kind of disappeared under the eaves of this cone-shaped hut. We could just see him from like the thighs down. And then he poked back under and motioned us forward. And I came up under the thing and came face to face with the guy who was obviously the chief of the village, okay? No cartilage in his nose. It was just this piece of meat hanging there, okay? And one greedy tooth hanging down, okay? And, okay, hey, how's it going, man? What's up? And he hands me this bowl of blood and betel nuts. Betel nuts are like peyote, okay? And, okay, so what am I supposed to do with this? You have to drink it. What, are you shitting me? He goes, no, you have to drink it. I said, I have to drink it? Oh, yeah. Okay, and these guys are getting loaded, smoking red palm leaves, okay, and they're doing the betel nuts and everything. You can always tell when somebody's been doing betel nuts because it turns your teeth red. So you see somebody with red teeth. Ha-ha! Okay. Wake me up! Oh, no. So I said, well, shit, okay, I've done weirder things. And so I drank this bowl of blood and betel nuts. And
what kind of blood was it?
It was chicken blood.
Okay, chicken
blood. Yeah, no salmonella here. he back and forth with the guy that was the chief, and I said, what's up? He said, well, they want you to stay the night. And they're like, oh, I don't think so. He said, yeah, he said, we got to get the hell out of here because I think he's got a daughter that he wants to shove off on you, okay? I don't do shotgun weddings unless I've had the fun. So we shot our scene and just pissed off. The thing is, I walked 7 miles through the jungle barefoot. And I didn't even know it. I was blast. Holy fuck up. Never have I ever been that bad. Oh man, it was messed up. But see, those were the kind of things that we got to do.
Well, I was about to ask you what your best experience was on a film set, but is that it? With everything you've done, does one film or one production stand out?
They all kind of do, all for different reasons, yeah. You know? There was that reason. and, of course, you know, House of Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, that basically changed my life.
And you got all these action figures of you now.
I have 9 different action figures. They're coming out with 2 more.
Hot Topic
Hot Topic t-shirts, 32 different styles of t-shirts. How much money have I seen? that whole thing is incredible. There was that, and you know, getting my first film with Jack Hill, which is another Quentin Tarantino story, because after Pulp Fiction, everybody declared Quentin Tarantino as the best American director, you know, ever. Right. And John Stewart, you know John Stewart?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Daily Show?
Yeah. They had him on the show, and he said, you know, everybody's calling you the best American director. In your mind, who is the best living American director? And he said, Jack Hill. And John Stewart, in his infinite wisdom, said, who's that? And then Quentin just laid into him. I mean, he ripped them a new one right on the guy's own show. Okay. Done. So Quentin heard about Jack Hill's student film and searched the thing out and found all the lost footage and everything, put it all together, and there was some sound problems that we had on the last day, and I had to... At the age of, like, God, I think I was about 55, I had to recreate my 22-year-old voice, okay? That was a challenge, yeah. Because I'd only had, like, 50 pounds of tobacco down my throat by that time. And he got Miramax to put that on the tail end of Swish Plane Sisters. So that was very cool of Quint to do that. And he's been a huge supporter of Jack's all the way down the line. So that's good.
Any other questions? Yes.
Did you ever do any work in Italy with like Enzo Castellari or any of that stuff?
Never worked in Europe. Only in the only things that I've done out of the country were in Mexico, the Swashbuckler. I wish they'd bring pirate films back. Well, they have, okay, but I'm not in them, God damn it. Because that was so much fun. We were 2 weeks in Cuernavaca, which is like the real Mexican Riviera, where all the really wealthy Mexicans go. And then 9 weeks in Puerto Vallarta. We shot on an exact duplicate of Sir Francis Drake's Golden Hind. The only modern piece of equipment on the ship was the head. All the navigation and everything was done by sextant. And we had to learn how to sail that ship. Yeah, it was cool. Where the hell was I going with this?
Other countries you filmed.
Oh, other countries. There, the Philippines, that's it.
Okay, anyone else? Yep.
Questions. One, how did you get your stage name? And two, because you've done such a wide body of work. Do you ever watch yourself on TV? Because your stuff's on all the time.
I happen to catch things on TV every once in a while. The very first TV show I did was The Untouchables, back in the 60s. And the character was a hitman. Surprise, surprise. And tortured and murdered seven guys in the course of the film. And at the end of the TV series, at the end of the show, the cops shoot him off the roof of this building. Done. So, your first show, you got to watch your first show, okay? So I'm sitting there with my girlfriend watching the show, and everything's going good. And the last scene comes, and I don't get shot off the roof. What's up with that? So I call my agent the next day, and I said, what's going on? She said, well, I'll find out. So she called the studio, and I said, well, we'd like to use Sid some more and have him, be the
heavy,
the hitman for Frank Nitti. And I went nuts. To the day, 2 weeks later, the American-Italian Don't Fuck With Us Society, started marching around the studio with signs saying that, they discriminated against Italians, that they were showing Italians in a bad light. Show me a Lithuanian mafia guy, okay? It never made any sense, okay? So I got jacked out of a job, yeah. But I every once in a while I'll stumble on a TV show. How I got my name was because people had a real tough time pronouncing my real name, which is Mosesian. So I took my father's first name as my last name. And there you have it. There Simple, no big stories.
Any other questions? Yes.
I was just curious how defensive you are of your own work. Like, how does the idea settle with you that in 20 years somebody else could be playing Captain Spaulding?
Ooh, doesn't bother me. I got the books.
Right on.
Yeah, everybody's got a right to do their shit. I'll tell you a story. Do we have time for this?
Yes, we do.
Okay. At one point in time, Jack Hill was signed by a Mexican production company to do four films starring Boris Karloff. Okay? Boris Karloff's co-star was going to be Sid Haig. And we were shooting it in Mexico. Well, at the last minute, Karloff's doctor said, there's no way I'm letting him go to Mexico. He'll die, okay? So the union said, okay, you can shoot it in the States. And everything was fine. But Sid, you can't. What are you talking about? Sid, we've made a special dispensation for Boris Karloff, and you're not included in it. And I said, excuse me, but if I were to check, I would bet that Boris Karloff's union card looks exactly like mine, okay, except for the fact that it's got his name on it. And they came up with this lame thing. They said, do you want him to die? I said, of course I don't want him to die. I want to work with him, okay? And they banned me from the set. If you show up even as a guest on that set, you'll be fined $2,500 and suspended for a year. Yeah, my union at work for me. So that was that story. Recently, there's been a company in the UK that has contacted Jack about redoing those four films because they never really got completed with me playing the Karloff role. Yeah. So it's not a done deal. Don't get on the internet and say, Sam, he's going to Newark, to the UK. No, I'm not going anywhere, okay? It's not a done deal. Done. But that's, how stuff happens. So that's part of that question because, maybe a little more than 20 years later, but I would be playing his role.
Okay, anyone else? Yes.
What's probably the weirdest acting job you've been given that you probably took it down?
I, the transvestite in Rocky Horror Show? when it was a stage play, I was offered that role. Can you see me? I don't think so. That was pretty weird. It doesn't get much weirder.
That's true. Okay, anyone else? We have time for a few more. Yep.
From earlier in your career to the 90s, you know, like you said, you were playing a lot of heavies. You were, at any point, did you see yourself, you know, could you picture yourself being on, like, the action figures, the T-shirts? Like, could you see yourself suddenly becoming, you know, as big as a character as Captain Spaulding?
No. No. What was happening in my career at the time was putting beans on the table, okay? And the idea of actually, well, first of all, there wasn't any such thing as action figures, but you know, it was. I didn't even think about it. I got real close with Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Okay. As a matter of fact, Hasbro was going to put out a line of action figures based on the show, but that never happened because, see, studio politics in this business just sucks so bad. We were doing Jason of Star Command, number one show on the air in the time slot, 2 years in a row. And because the show was so successful, the guy that was in charge of children's programming for CBS got bumped up to nighttime, okay? So this woman took over for him. So she came down to the set to see what we were doing, blah, 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 blah. And she brought along her little booger eater. And I had like six inch platforms that I wore because in their brilliance, I was supposed to be, you know, bigger than Jason, and he and I were the same size. So guess what I get to do? And I was in wardrobe, walking down the hall. The woman and her booger eater were coming this way, and we met at the intersection, and the kid literally ran into my knee and started crying, okay? At that moment in time, Jason Star Command ceased to exist.
Incredible.
Yeah. That was that. Studio politics at its finest. Yeah.
Wow.
Stupid.
Yes?
In Devil's Rejects, the that brilliant scene when you're in the car with the youngster and you're just torturing him after you've knocked his mom out, did you enjoy that?
I loved it. The poor kid really started crying, okay? But am I going to let up on him? Hell no. I got my job to do, kid. You can't hang with me. Tough.
My girlfriend's a teacher. She teaches elementary, and she can't deal with kids sometimes. And I put that clip on for her, and I said, you got to be like that.
Yeah, they'll straighten up right now. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, my own children, okay? It's too late. It's past the fact. You can't get me for abuse. One day, they just screwed up royally. Okay, I sit down on that couch, okay? And they were sitting there, and I was going back and forth trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I was really breathing heavily, you know? And they're going, oh, no, no, please, please. And I stopped, and I looked at them, and I said, this is the voice of God. Let's clean out the shorts. Yeah, that did it right there. Good little boy and girl from that time on.
Okay, a few more. Yep, back there.
Ghost of a Thousand Corpses. Love the movie. The DVD, though, there's an extra on it. The tiny fuck to stump. Like, where did that come from?
Oh, so you didn't find the Easter eggs?
No.
Search. Okay. In one of the Easter eggs, we're in a conversation. And we're talking about Tiny. And I called the mushmouth motherfucker or something. And Bill said, well, at least he's stump broke. This is all just off the cuff. Nobody knows what the hell we're going to say, okay? And Sherry looked at me in all innocence and honesty and said, what's stump broke? And I said, well, before you get your first piece of ass, you got to practice on something. I just couldn't give up the stump. So, there you go. That's how. That's how it came.
There's one down here. Yes.
Yeah, I want to put the bad guy thing to bed forever and play Rasputin.
Well, I did want to mention before we go that anyone who was down there who bought a photo, an autograph from Sid, that he takes a certain percentage and gives it to a couple of charities that is incredible. Habitat for Humanity is one of them.
Yeah.
And they go and build houses for low-income families, right? And the other one is
the North Shore Animal League.
And they specialize in...
Yeah, it's the only... no-kill animal shelter in the country.
Right on.
They find homes for every animal.
So any of you who remember Linda Blair?
the reason that I donate to Habitat for Humanity is that it isn't a total giveaway, okay? You got to get in there and bust your ass to build your own house.
Right on.
And that is something that is very near and dear to me. Got time for one more story?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
When my grandfather on my mother's side came to this country, he was 15 years old. He left his wife and first child back in the old country, which is Armenia, and landed in Boston and worked 7 days a week, 12, 14, 16 hours a day, didn't make any difference, saved enough money to bring them over, and bought a horse and wagon, and by themselves went across country to California. Landed in Central California, he got down from the wagon, grabbed a handful of dirt, felt it, smelt it, looked around, and wanted to find out if that was available. And it was, and he bought that property for 50 cents an acre, took all of the money he had, and now he had to find some shelter, and there were a couple of big mulberry trees on the property, and he scrounged some lumber here and there and built a shack for them to live in. And my grandmother climbed up into the trees, gathered the cocoons, wove her own silk. Went up into the hills and gathered wildflowers, made dye to dye the cloth, and took it into town and sold it so that they could get their first crop in the ground. That's why I hate these motherfuckers that have got their hand out for everything, okay? When somebody says, I need a house to live in, and I'm willing to, you know, bang my thumb with a hammer to get it done, they got whatever I got.
Thanks for coming out, and thanks everyone for being here. We'll be downstairs again for the next hour or so. Yeah, before we wrap up. Thanks again.
Okay.
To make sure you get the rest of the Festival of Fear 2008 panel recordings, subscribe to Destroy the Brain via iTunes. Just type in Destroy the Brain in the search option from the iTunes store and you'll find it. You can also go to destroythebrainonline.com and subscribe clicking on the graphics off to the right. Thanks again and stay tuned for more, including Ruggiero Deodato, Tura Santana, Lloyd Kaufman, and a couple more. Thanks again.